maybe there were two people on the side in my class of 50 who just wanted to keep the answer to themselves, but the rest 48 actually wanted to help one another.
Hi, I'm Kieran Shetry.
And I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
Pooja Sankar, the founder and CEO of Piazza. It's the free Q&A platform that helps students save time and helps them learn using the power of community. Kieran's a big education advocate, and I've been studying closely how distance learning and collaboration tools are going to transform the future of education. So this is very exciting for me, too. So Pooja, welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us, first off, especially on short notice. And I'm really glad we got a chance to put this together. And also, one thing that I noticed that was really cool is that we all have Maryland in common, which was really exciting for me to see. Kieran, you were undergrad, right?
Yes, I was undergrad at University of Maryland.
And I did my MBA there, corner of campus.
Many years prior.
I did my master's in.
Go ahead. What did you say? Sorry.
And you were one of the smart ones, basically. Yeah, as I say. Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing that I wanted to just really ask you is, what's the whole entire origin of, you know, what you've been doing? I mean, how did you start Piazza? How did you get from point A to point Z or M or whatever we want to call where you're at now?
I was one of only three women studying computer science in my engineering school in India. And having grown up in a very traditional part of North India, the capital of the poorest state, Bihar, where in, eighth grade and ninth grade, girls were being dropped out by their parents to be married off. When I went to engineering school and I was surrounded by boys, I didn't know how to speak to them or look at them. And here I was surrounded by the smartest students in India, smartest professors in India. And I felt barriers and I felt held back in many ways. And I have vivid memories of my computer lab where I was on the edge near the wall at my computer by myself being stuck looking at a compiler error and could not figure out how to get my code compiled. And all the boys in the center of the lab huddled around one another, physically close, comfortable, socially, and I was too awkward. And they learned so much through 4 years of college. And when we all graduated, I knew I was at some form of disadvantage coming out into the real world, and did my master's in computer science at University of Maryland, College Park. I was a software engineer at Oracle for a couple of years, blessed with mentorship there. And I was at Facebook. And when I went to Stanford Business School, in an entrepreneurship class, these founders would share their story. And every founding story had this common theme of, think about a problem you're passionate about. And almost overnight, it was so obvious to me. The problem I was passionate about is when there's that student in their college, in their class, and they're surrounded by brilliant people who want to help, but for some set of reasons, they have barriers. How can you connect them in ways that allow them to flourish? And today, 2011, we had our public launch, but today, 2017, we've crossed over 2 million students who use the product on an annual basis. Professors adopted around the world, whether it's that professor at Cornell teaching intro to algorithms or the professor at Georgia Tech or University of Iowa teaching machine learning, their students now have this advantage that I never had. And they can ask and answer questions, whether it's 2 a.m. in the night, whether it's that distance learning mother of two kids who is taking professional classes on the side and can't walk into office hours. They now have the ability to tap into the knowledge of all the students in their class in a way that I wished I had.
How important is it, in your opinion, that there is a sense of either camaraderie or a sense that you, if you needed help, you were not necessarily alone? Competition versus collaboration, especially when it comes to careers where there is a lot of competition and pressure to be the best.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I think what I've seen patterns on Piazza emulate real needs of us as social animals. And when I first launched Piazza in early 2011, I remember skeptical students or people around me saying, why would students help one another? And my recollection of undergraduate days was maybe there were two people on the side in my class of 50 who just wanted to keep the answer to themselves, but the rest 48 actually wanted to help one another. And when we launched Piazza, I continued to have that confidence in us as humans with this intrinsic desire to want to help. And we saw that. Maybe there were two people who would not log on, but 48 were logging on in that class of 50 and helping one another out. Today, the word that students or teaching assistants or professors and now employers use is community for Piazza. And there's a connection. They log on online from their dorm room because there's snow at MIT. It's, I don't know, freezing in Boston. And now when anyone has a question, they say, go check on Piazza, and everyone's there.
I mean, so, yeah, I was just going to say, sure. I think what's interesting to me about that is it touches on multiple different things. I mean, obviously, you've got the location-based aspect where if you have bad weather, you're able to react to that and you're able to have a community online and get an answer. But also, I thought it was really interesting, as you said, that there's a gender component to it. And I think that there's also a psychographic component to it. I might be using the wrong term, but just the makeup of each person, everybody, I feel like, learns very differently. And we've had this mentality where everybody is going to be taught in the same exact way, even though now we have the tools to personalize. So I know I'm throwing a lot at you now, but which direction do you want to take that?
Yeah, I want to speak a little bit on how much the feeling of isolation is prevalent among this population that has surprised me personally. I thought it was about, I'm a young girl. I grew up in a traditional part of India where boys and girls didn't speak to each other. I've learned over the years that even young women today who grew up in societies in America where co-ed high school was the norm, they felt like they didn't have support. They felt scared to raise their hand. I've found people coming from poorer backgrounds, socioeconomic status, being a huge reason for why they're afraid to raise their hands because they feel different. And it's all their own backgrounds. I have found students of different color, different handicaps, are shy. They're scared. And so in some form or shape, this feeling of isolation, this feeling of being the outsider in that room of 600 students being lectured at in many ways, and then going off on their own, if they don't have that strong social support group outside the class, so many students just aren't able to learn as much as, say, others in the class are able to.
You know, and you bring up a lot of good points because, number one, first of all, there is a cultural element to this, Pooja, and tell me if you disagree, in that, you know, there is in many South Asian cultures, it's a respect factor. You know, you don't raise your hand and insert yourself. Your elder is, you know, to be respected. Number two, there's a gender divide in that, you know, you're definitely, as you know, one of the only females in the class, not going to raise your hand or, you know, speak ahead of males. It's like a sort of an ingrown deference that you have to fight against, in addition to the everyday challenges that anybody would face, being intimidated and being in, you know, a large environment with a bunch of smart people and trying to hold your own.
Yeah.
Okay, lightning round. Fun questions.
Okay. Pooja, if you did not do this, if this was not your career, what would be your dream job?
Well, I have two little kids at home, and every day I watch them grow. And if it wasn't Piazza, it would be investing in them heavily so that they could go do their own version of Piazza when they grow up.
All right, Jeremy, what's your dream job if you weren't doing this?
Oh, God, my dream job? Full-time journalist. Done. Okay. Instead of consulting firm / journalism. That's easy. How about you?
I'd like to host Big Brother.
Oh, why are you obsessed with Big Brother? It's so bad.
Better job than Julie Chen. No offense. I love Julie Chen, but come on. I want to host Big Brother and or win the American Ninja Warrior Challenge. But given the fact that I don't exercise that much anymore,
reason why I want you to host Big Brother is so I don't have to hear you talk about wanting to host Big Brother, to be honest. Anyway,
I hear you. All right, what about this worst professor or like worst class or worst professor, you know, anecdote?
You don't have to say their name.
Oh, gosh. Well, earlier on in 2011, I used to just fly to schools, uninvited, unknown, Piazza's not a brand, and just knock on doors and say, hi, Professor So-and-so, I built this product, can I show it to you? And 7 of 10 professors would invite me in and say, I've got 5 minutes, and I would give a demo. And on the spot, you could just tell, eyes wide open, excited. They'd say, I'm going to use this. Probably 1 in 10 would say, no, thank you, or maybe 2 in 10. And 1 in 10 would just say, get out of my office. And I'd just, with a heavy heart, walk outside the office, be like, what am I doing and why am I doing this? And I'd have to keep reminding myself that one student at a time, one professor at a time, I'm going to create an opportunity for someone somewhere to learn more.
Oh, I have a good one. So when you were coding, what snack or beverage / Mountain Dew are you drinking?
When I was coding, it was India. So it's probably Indian masala chai and Indian pakoda or samosa.
Pakoda is like fried vegetables, Jeremy. You would not like it.
I know what those are. It's not, I mean, I don't know the different regions. So I don't know, like, if you have gulab jamun or if that's like a totally different region. See, that's kind of like, you know, if you just come to America and you just assume that, like, they have fried okra in New York the way they have it in Georgia. So I'm ignorant, but at least I admit it. So one of, I guess one last lightning round question I have for you is favorite hangout when you were by College Park. Was the Wawa still there?
I can't wait to hear
it. It was there.
You guys, I'm so old. We didn't have a Wawa. We had the VU, RJ Bentley's, the cellar. No. Yeah. And the upstairs part of the VU. You know what I'm talking about? We had Cluck You chicken wings. That's it.
IHOP was there too.
Oh, yeah.
I used to go to the IHOP.
The IHOP right when you turn on Cherry Hill Road.
Yeah.
So I lived in the Seven Springs Village right over there. Mm. So what year were you there?
2002 to 2004.
I was there 2004 to 2006. Oh, we just missed each other.
1992 to 1996. I win. I'm the crone.
Let me see. Do I have any other lightnings? Kieran, do you have any?
Favorite dog breed?
I'm just learning about dog breeds. I think there was a golden Doodle. I saw a little puppy lick my dog, my son, and I fell in love, and I thought the day would never come, but I'm ready to get him a dog. And I learned, I believe the breed that licked his face all over was a golden doodle.
You will be very happy to hear this, but every time somebody comes on Future Proof, we actually give them a puppy. So if you look under your chair right now, how great would that be, Karen? Can we do that, like, as a real thing?
That would be hilarious. But the reason it's a good thing, Pooja, is because A, they don't shed, okay? And B, they are hypoallergenic, and they're very sweet, but they have a lot.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay, we're looking for local breeders in the San Francisco area right after this. Everybody's a very different way of learning perspective. What have you learned also yourself as you've built out this platform as, because it's been a few years now, congrats for that. But I think that inevitably I'm imagining the initial product and where you're at now wind up looking very different from one another as you kind of keep iterating and getting feedback from the crowd, no?
Yeah, from the core product, I would say the North Star has always been the same. It's the students who come in to college bright-eyed, eager, want to learn, motivated to learn, have barriers of some form and shape. And it's about eliminating those barriers for these students. So in that regards, the North Star stays strong for Piazza as much as day zero as it is today, 7 years in post-launch. The, I would say, dimensions along which we've been able to help students has expanded, which is really exciting. So the number of use cases that Piazza has now been an aid to these students. There was the starting with, it's 2 a.m. I'm stuck. If I can't get unstuck within 2 minutes, I submit this homework incomplete, was sort of the core problem statement we wanted to solve. Since then, it's gone into a, I want to be the TA to that professor next year. How can I answer questions a lot so that the TA, the professor might recognize me? And when they recognize me, I have a chance of being a TA to a highly coveted class. That's been another enhancement where these shy girls are going outside their comfort zone now to just answer. I've come across students who, in an attempt to better understand the material, are actually aggressively wanting to answer questions because by answering other students' questions, they're learning the material better. Or I'm finding these now more recently, these students want to take the classes that they know will be coveted by employers. So if they know that Roche or IBM or Facebook want to build out their data science team and machine learning is the class to take to land an opportunity there, machine learning is going to be in my repertoire of classes that I take by third year so I can get discovered by employers for a potential data scientist role.
You don't sound like somebody who is afraid to speak up. You are very, very, very articulate. And part of one of the things that I'm really passionate about when it comes to women and the education of young girls is that there comes a time, it's really weird, they have studies on this, and I've done several news reports on this, that everything's an equal playing field. And then at some point, usually around the middle school years, when girls are less likely to put themselves out there to stand up in front and solve, you know, a problem on the math board in front of the entire classroom. And so they retreat. And it's not because they don't have the smarts. It's because it's an uncomfortable environment to go stand up in front of an entire classroom and solve a problem on the blackboard in front of everybody. So what I found really fascinating when you talk about this collaboration issue, there are schools that actually have single gender classrooms, not schools, like meaning that they do all of their other activities together. But in terms of math and science and English and reading, they separate them out because they found that when women feel more comfortable collaborating, whereas guys sometimes are competition driven. So you look at the boys' math classroom and it's like you get to crumple up a piece of paper. If you make it into the trash can, then you're the one that gets to answer the question. Whereas in the girls' classroom, it's soft lighting, the desks are pushed together, and you solve the problems together. My question is this: it's great, but are we really preparing people for how the real world is? I mean, because we have to basically adapt to what our environment is. And if the real world is a cutthroat boardroom and we're trying to make concessions for who's more comfortable in what environment, are we actually setting people up for a loss in a way?
I think that's a really interesting question. I've actually been very close to employers, some of the best brands out there that want to build successful workforces. And there's this shift I've seen in employers actually seeking input and signal on students who are more collaborative in nature. And so on students' profiles on Piazza, those that are either TAs or even we call them top students because they answer a significant portion of other students' questions and even ask questions that get endorsements by professors for being a good question to think of that's really applicable to a broad audience. Employers actively seek out those students because they want to build workforces where they're all coming in. This young generation is coming in and will be team players with one another. So I would even wonder if the workforce has adapted and is understanding that that's a coveted trait among this younger population.
How do you test that out, not just as Piazza, but how does the industry test that out and show that having these more collaborative, sometimes introverted individuals is valuable to have in a diverse workforce?
I would guess, because I can't know exactly what's going on within organizations, but I would guess that they have their own studies that show long-term performance outcomes with the individuals and the traits and the performance feedback along the way. And that's why what we hear when they come to us is, how can I find out the ones who are really collaborative?
Is this a business model that's applicable to other trades? And what I mean is media, marketing, journalism, let's even say like trade schools, where, you know, people are learning a craft and a trade at like a DeVry Institute, let's say, as opposed to going into something that's, you know, much more corporate centric. Can that work in the same way, in your opinion?
So a few things I've seen. The pain that companies feel today is more being able to attract, engage, and recruit technical talent, in the sense of, say they were to go to a campus and set up two different booths, one that is more about the software engineering, digital technical roles, and one's for the software roles. They don't have as much of a hard time getting the line at the booth that's about the softer roles, whether marketing, et cetera. So they're doing fine. You know, I'm sure they could always want different talent, better talent, you know, proactively find the talent. Technical is where the lines can often be empty. So an example of that might be a GE Digital that badly needs data science hires, right? And that's really typical now for companies, as every company becomes a technology company, to need the computer science background. And they'll go, they'll set up an event, and there's no one in line. So now what do? They have no alternative. I have heard of companies that have had their data science recs open for 9 months with no pipeline. So Piazza suddenly enables them, even if it's just those three hires, enables them a shot at finding the right talent, engaging the talent digitally year-round, and telling them their story. Did you know we are a company, Roche? Did you know here's how your background in algorithms and sequencing and data mining will allow you to change lives and save lives? Now students learn that. And if Roche were to set up a booth, you'd have computer science talent lining up.
Is this unique to the very, very highly specialized skill set of the type of people like you, like other, you know, engineering and STEM experts of the future, as opposed to some other areas of trade and also in other job areas?
It's where the pain's the most. And where the pain is the most is where the need's the most, the creativity and innovation's the most. And so companies are going out of their way to make sure that they're engaging with this talent, the technical talent that will help transform the companies in this digital entire shift, so that when they go to campus, they have students who... The other one thing is about the profile. The engineering types can often be pretty introverted. They're happy just hanging out in their dorm rooms, working on side projects, building the next website, if you will. And to draw them out for a company, it becomes all the more important to connect this technical talent with their story and with their mission and with their purpose in the world. And so Piazza becomes suddenly an avenue to say, we are saving lives or we are changing the world. And this is how you may not know that the data science work that you will be able to do looking at our terabytes of data will impact the world, create efficiencies, increase possibilities for people in third world developing countries in these ways. And imagine then digital and technology becomes a platform by which companies can share their story with this talent pool that, again, is introverted, right? They chose a certain profession and they would love nothing more than to sometimes look at their computer screen and write code.
That sounds actually kind of fun to me personally. So I get it. I'm like building random side projects for no reason. And people are like, why are you doing that? That's fun. It's building my skill set. And even for a project that we're working on now, it's kind of hard for me to find the specific skill set that I need. So I totally identify with that. Kieran, you're up.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, when you're looking for your specific skill set, it's certainly not me. I feel like Evan, what's his face? I feel like the Vince Vaughn of the internship when I'm around you guys. One of the things I tell my kids is kids don't ever, ever, ever go into acting or TV or journalism or radio, because you'll just set yourself up for a loss. Ironically, both of my kids absolutely love STEM technologies. And at their high school and middle school levels, this is something that's being pushed, obviously, for a lot of reasons, but for the smart reasons, which is that it's in demand. And what I was going to ask you, Pooja, is, look, if somebody's coming out of a four-year university, even Maryland now, personally, I couldn't afford to go to Maryland. It's, you know, 45 grand for out of state. When I went there, I think I got my full-on education off my mother's, like, you know, savings bonds that she put aside for me. You have to basically have a career in mind that is going to help you have a job, you know what I mean, and pay your bills. How important is it for us to encourage young people to study in sectors where once they graduate, there's actually work for them?
It's a fascinating question, and I tend to have so many viewpoints being close to employers, being close to students, and being close to professors and then deans of universities. So I'll start with the employers just because it's more recent in my mind. Employers are nervous because they need so much supply of technical talent for the roles and the jobs they need to get done that they see 5-10 years down the line, whether it's Ford building the next version of the autonomous vehicle, NVIDIA applying really stellar machine learning or robotics. And you think about then, professors want to be a partner to the companies in developing curriculum that sets their students up for success. You think about deans. Deans want to know what companies need so that they can train their college force to be the right workforce. you see employers being nervous saying, how can I be closer to academia so I can share what I do need? And or just the other day, I had the flip question, what are they learning so I can know what I need to train my current workforce with so that we're all up to date on the latest technology? And then students often don't have enough access to information. And one of the more powerful facets of Piazza down the line and starting even now is, how can we guide students to say, hey, if Facebook is your dream internship, or if that data science startup, you know, there in Boston is your dream internship, how can you understand what classes they would like you to have taken to be well suited? So it comes together in a beautiful way where everyone wants to be on the same page, and companies want the students to be able to develop more and more and more technical prowess, if you will, so that by the time they graduate, you know, they can impact these organizations to help take them where they need to be.
I think also, as you're talking about that, it got me thinking about the role of the professor in all of this. And I cannot imagine ever being a professor, but I think it's a very laudable thing for anybody to do. But I kind of imagine they saw the world that they grew up in as, this is how you are a professor or instructor. And now with platforms like yours, in some ways it changes their relationship to the student. I'm just wondering, how difficult is it to not just get the buy-in from the student about, this is a way that you can learn, and also from the employer, but how can you get the buy-in from the professors? Because I imagine that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I guess we sort of skimmed over that really quickly. Piazza is adopted by professors, so it's really good that you bring that up. The entire decision of whether to use Piazza in your class is actually made by the professor of the class. And I learned early on that Piazza saves professors 10 to 15 hours a week because they don't have to answer the same question from students over email 20 times. And sometimes other students come in, weigh in, and answer the question for one another, and professors simply have to come in and click a button that says endorse, this is a good question or this is a good answer. And so all of the growth from what was half of Stanford in 2011 using Piazza to then all of Stanford, now 98% plus CS kids to all the top universities and more, has been driven by professors telling other professors that Piazza saves them time. It increases student engagement, student learning, retention, which is why deans and administrators become really excited about Piazza, where it's being adopted by professors. And I found professors are eager to be accessible, either be accessible to students 24/7 and or give resources to one another, so they're no longer the bottleneck, which I find really compelling. Like, I'm going to be asleep at 2 a.m. when you're working on your assignment. Here's a resource to you so that you can be there for one another.
Very true. I mean, that actually makes sense. How many hours did you say it saves professors? They said like 10 to 12, 15 hours.
10 to 15 hours a week. Yeah, they told me that early on. It was really impressive. And the other fascinating thing is budgets get tighter two things. Budgets get tighter, and so professors have fewer and fewer TA resources and other teaching assistant resources. And class sizes are getting bigger, to the earlier point, that employers want more technical talent, students with more programming skills. And so what might have been a 200-student class 7 years ago now is an 800-student class. And you find that teachers, professors are getting burdened by the load, and students are getting used to responses within minutes because that's just what text and email is now.
Is there, I don't want to be too negative on education, but my thought has always been, my daughter's in 4.5 years old, and my thought is, well, maybe education will be so expensive at this point that by the time she's 18, I can just fund a startup for her and have her, you know, give out the money like on a yearly basis for a few years, and maybe she'll learn more that way. And I just got to thinking about that because what you were saying about, well, class sizes are getting bigger, but also tuition is going up, and also they have less time for, and I'm like, at what point is this model not worth it or sustainable? I know that what you're doing is not competitive, it's complementary. But what do you think about the larger space where people look at distance learning and all of these other opportunities to learn that might be more cost efficient and might also, in some ways, like we always assume distance learning is, or a lot of people assume it's inferior, might be inferior for some learners and it might actually be superior for some. So
when I go and meet professors on campus, when I meet students on campus, what I hear from them all is the priceless value, I would say, to the real-time collaboration that ends up happening, that creates these insights, and they're all compounding upon one another. And you know, again, all anecdotal, but when you meet that young female computer science major who comes to me and says, you know, it was her project and Piazza that enabled her, of course, to connect with her project team members that allowed her to stay in computer science, would the story have been the same, the counterfactual, had she been doing it distance learning? It's unclear.
Yeah. And you know what, it brings up the other point that you spoke about before, which is that the importance of being able to speak up in a group setting, you're going to need that skill set when you have a job. You know, everybody can't just sit around and write code in a corner. I mean, maybe many people can, but you know, at some point you still got to go in that boardroom, put together your group's project, present it in a way. So there is a social element that's very vital about education. And you brought it up a lot in this conversation, Pooja, where you said that there is, while you may be the smartest engineer in the room and you may be the best coder in the room and you can solve an algorithm in 2 seconds, or maybe you don't solve algorithms, but that's why I'm a journalism major. But what I mean is that that lacking is actually in your ability to present that in a way that, you know, the layperson understands, the ability to feel comfortable enough to mingle, you know, at a work event or at a conference, so that you can actually let people know what your next genius down the road idea is. If you don't have the ability to communicate it, what good is it?
Absolutely. I would agree.
One more, I think, quick question I want to ask. So, I mean, if we're talking, let's say a few years from now, 3 years from now, what is the space that you inhabit? What does that look like? Not just for Piazza, but for the general category as well.
Yeah. Again, the North Star is being that aid to the student who has so much potential, and being that aid during college and even before college and even after college, so that they're so much closer to realizing their full potential.
Is this model also, you know, you talk about it as well. What about these remote villages? You know, in Nepal, we're struggling with this as well. After the earthquake, there were certain schools that were built. And then, you know, after the earthquake, all of the progress was just lost. And then when people can start putting kids back in school again, they're going to put their sons in before their daughters. I mean, it's a cultural thing and it happens all over the world. Is there a way for this whole entire idea of Piazza to help, you know, developing countries connect to resources and especially education resources in remote areas, remote villages, being wired, being able to have access to, let's say, even hearing from a person like you?
Yeah. You touched on two components. One, it would humble me if students in a remote corner in Nepal could hear my story and be impacted in their own positive way. But there are three examples I wanted to share of how, again, it's more on the professors and their openness and eagerness to impact students in remote corners. I had a professor at UPenn who actually allowed 100 students of India to sign on into the class he set up on Piazza, so that it was not only the students at University of Pennsylvania who had access to this brilliant professor's mind and knowledge of one another. 100 students in India were able to tap into that knowledge and be a part. And students at the UPenn class were able to be sort of volunteer tutors, if you will, to the students in India. There was a professor at Himachal Pradesh, which is near Nepal, Kiran, and this professor wrote in saying, "Pooja, thank you for Piazza. All my students are remote, and often they cannot travel into school, but we all connect online, and I host an English class for my students here in this remote corner so we all can learn English." And Piazza was facilitating that. My father-in-law is from a small town near Tirunelveli in South India, and he used to pass this college every day on bus. And once he stumbled upon this professor in Tirunelveli who uses Piazza, and he saw that so close to his hometown where he grew up in poverty, here there were professors and students furthering themselves and their lives and their education through use of Piazza. So it's organically grown.
We should let you bounce. This has been really great. And Pooja, thank you so much for making the time to join us.
Thank you both. This has been great.
And thank you so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. You can also rate us on Apple Podcasts, and you might think it's not a big deal. It is a big deal if you do so. It helps other people find out about what we're doing and helps them make themselves future-proof as well. So, once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman.
And I'm Kieran Shetry.
And you've been listening to Future Proof.